Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin. Welcome to Your Money. All right, it is time to check in with one of my favorite analysts. U.S. stocks did an abrupt about-face overnight, suffering their worst performance in months. Asian stocks are trading lower this morning as well. So are markets waking up to economic reality? Have we reached a new inflection point, or was it simply profit-taking on what's been an extraordinary run? And how are tech stocks doing? We thought they led the rally. What do we need to understand about tech stocks now? Joining us on Answer These Questions and more of our questions is Terence Wong. He's founder and CEO of Azure Capital. Terence, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Now, just yesterday, we were reporting that the NASDAQ had topped 10,000 for the first time ever. What a difference a day makes, hey? The NASDAQ dropped more than 5% overnight. The Dow and S&P 500 did even worse. So let me start by asking you a couple of questions. Do you think markets are waking up to economic reality?
Hey, Michelle, as well. Not exactly a good morning for anyone that's invested. If you look at the numbers, yeah, it looks very, very ugly. There's just blood all over. But if you were to ask me, I mean, my message has been pretty consistent over the last few months that, you know, we've been regularly speaking. I think that the market hasn't fully appreciated, you know, the issues with the virus. It's going to be the impact on the economy. The global economy is going to be a lot stronger than what we give it credit for, and also that there's this ongoing trade war that have that's intensified over the last few months. There's a lot of rhetoric out there, and I believe that some of these threats will actually affect the market. So there are a lot of negatives out there. It's just that I believe that the market over since end of March, we've been looking at it from rose-tinted glasses, and we have chosen to look at the positives that, you know, beyond the lockdown, global lockdown, there will be a revival in a lot of the businesses, which is true. But at the end of it, there are going to be a lot of businesses that are going to be hurt. There are a lot of people that are going to continue to be unemployed, millions of them out there.
Do you think we've really reached a new inflection point?
Well, I don't think so. I feel that, you know, there is going to be, as I mentioned the last time we spoke, I think that there's going to be another leg down. At that point in time, then we need to consider whether the economy is really, on the proper foot, and whether the things that the Fed, the central banks have done in general, would be able to assist the economies to get back on its feet.
So remind our listeners again who may not have tuned in last month, are you talking about domestic lockdowns, sporadic and targeted over in the US, second wave?
Well, I'm talking about just in general. I mean, like, there will be a lot of economic issues coming through if the economy turns out to be worse than expected, and there is going to be a potential, there can possibly be a potential second wave of the virus, and that will bring the economy back down on its knees. So that's something that I think investors would have to look out for.
Sophisticated ones, yeah. Given all this, are you a net buyer, a seller, or are you staying on the sidelines?
I continue to. I mean, over the last couple of weeks, in fact, over the last month, as the markets continue to march new highs for the US, but in Singapore, if you look at the numbers, it has also done tremendously well. Over the past, I think, 2 weeks, the markets were up about 12%, which I feel this surge has been a bit too strong, and so I've been selling off on the local markets.
All right. If we look at tech stocks in the U.S., we saw NASDAQ hit a high on Tuesday, briefly trading above 10,000 for the first time. How resilient do you think tech stocks are post-rally?
Well, the tech stocks have done, yeah, you're right, they've done very, very well over this period of time. Many of them, like Amazon, Netflix, Zoom, you know, they're supposed to be beneficiaries of this pandemic. And I do get it. And it is true. But I believe that ultimately investors also have to be sensitive to to valuations. I don't think it is realistic to expect companies to continue to trade at, you know, over 100 times PE for a prolonged period of time. I mentioned about the renewed trade war between US and China. That will have an impact on tech stocks. And I am puzzled that as the trade war became a little bit more intense, you know, as Donald Trump tried to unleash more measures and saying that they don't need China, that the tech stocks were still relatively resilient. I tell you why. I mean, in 2018, 2019, many of these tech stocks, particularly, you know, the likes of Apple, they were caught in a crossfire as it manufactured, as Apple had manufactured its iPhones in China. And China also happens to be one of its most important markets in terms of sales. Stock price was hit during the period in 2018-2019. The same goes for a lot of the chip makers like Intel, Qualcomm, you know, Nvidia, which have significant revenue contribution coming from China. So if they were to be hit, and given that these guys are the bellwethers, I think it will affect the sentiment across the tech chain.
All right. And so for investors wondering how to tell when's a good time to sell their tech stocks, what would you say to them?
I think it's, of course, very, very stock specific.
Yep.
And we have seen that those that are, you know, in cloud, the companies that have benefited from the pandemic, rightfully should do better. Whereas those guys that do have exposure, you know, with manufacturing facilities in the likes of China, those are guys that you probably have to be a little bit more to be wary about. But then again, on the topic of the guys that are the cloud guys, you know, we also have to be very, very concerned about the valuations. It's not like you can continue to buy it. We still have to be, like, say, sensitive to how they do and what the earnings are going to be like.
All right, it's Terence Wong, CEO of Azure Capital. If we bring it back home, everybody looking to Singapore's recovery, which sectors do you expect to recover fastest, Terence?
Right, I think if you look at the guys that got hit the hardest, those will likely see the strongest rebound. We have already seen that actually at the start of, towards the end of May and into early June, many of the guys in the hospitality sector, many of them in retail, as well as the aviation guys, they have all like jumped tremendously. Many people, and I hear investors lament, you know, that I should have bought, you know, but I don't think that they're too late. This sell down will give them an opportunity to reposition to go into these recovery sectors. Another recovery sector that I think is interesting and relatively safe, safer, will be the property guys. Many of these big property developers will of course be hit in the short term, but the impact will not almost be as severe as in the past, and there are quite a few reasons for that. But interestingly, if you look at the valuations, it is trading about 40-50% discount to its RNAV, which I think is attractive. So give it a little bit of time. If the markets were to come off, they trade at a bigger discount to RNAV, and I think it makes it a lot more interesting and attractive to investors.
All right, Terence, let's move over to Hong Kong and news related to Hong Kong. So Asia-focused banking giant HSBC's very vocal support for China's controversial Hong Kong security law has not been well received in Britain. The London-headquartered lender last week backed Beijing's contentious legal proposal for Hong Kong. HSBC's announcement has angered business and political circles in Britain. So what do you think this means for the bank? It's coming under fire for backing China's Hong Kong law. Do you think it's going to impact the bank and their consumer base over in Hong Kong?
Yeah. Well, Michelle, I just want to check. This program is called Money and Me, right?
Indeed. So not political,
okay,
analyst, don't worry.
It's not political, yeah. If it were, then I have a lot to say about UK. But anyway, that's another story for another day then. HSBC is clearly in a polygamous relationship. And, you know, when there's such a relationship, it always ends up being ugly. While it may be based in UK, its roots are deeply entrenched in Hong Kong. Well, if you go to Hong Kong, if you look at the currency, you realize that quite a few, a lot of them, probably a third of them, will be printed buy with HSBC's name on it. So there's a long history with HSBC being in Hong Kong. But in recent years, I think, HSBC tried to please UK, they tried to please China, but in the end, no one was happy. 2016-2017, I think, was a defining moment. HSBC cooperated in the US investigation into Huawei. And this very, very obviously incurred the wrath of China. That's no good, as China is its biggest market, accounting for probably a third of its revenue. And during the protest days, if you remember last year, it's a very iconic lions that sits outside its Hong Kong towers. That one was vandalized and was moved for only the third time in history. And late last month, Hong Kong's former chief executive Leong Zanin called on business people, the politicians from the mainland of Hong Kong who hold accounts at HSBC to take immediate action to protect themselves. Not really sure what that means, but it sounds pretty severe. And finally, HSBC had to endorse the security law. Right, I don't blame them. Any firm would need a safe and stable Hong Kong to conduct business in. But I think because of HSBC's very, very unique position, its stand has been amplified and highly politicized.
All right. We've talked about SIA in past shows. Just recently, I think people were cheering what looked like SIA attempting to meet new travel demands, looking to allow passengers from some Australian and New Zealand cities to transit through Changi Airport. What do you make of SIA as a stock? And in terms of the sector for Asian aviation, what sort of recovery are you anticipating?
Well, yeah, I think it's just going to be positive in general, because nothing can be worse than, what we saw in April and May. Mm-hmm. At a point that the juncture was 96% of its capacity was cut, right? And the passengers and these passenger planes were actually used for cargo. That's how bad it is. So we are definitely not out of the woods yet. But it's heartening to see them, announce an expanded schedule for June and July. There'll be new flights that's going to be added. All these would lead to a potential. In fact, we are already in the midst of, we're looking forward to a recovery. But if you ask me about the equities, airlines in general, like I said, in the past few couple of months, we've been talking about airlines. And I think airlines don't typically make good investments. I never like the airlines. Mm. But in this case, government stands firmly behind SIA. Mm. The stock price has been dumped down, and there's a massive rights issue. So there's a lot of cash in its coffers that will allow it to, tolerate a few bad years. This year that we're looking at right now in the financial year 2021, because the year end is in March, we are now in the first quarter, which is going to be the worst quarter in its history, and they're going to probably end up with a billion or two in losses. But that's it. I think the worst quarter is almost going to be behind it. And I think that should the markets correct and SIA falls to, say, 0.6, 0.7 times price to book, which was what we saw a few weeks ago before the run-up, then I think it is an okay time to actually accumulate the stock.
Well, you're right, Terrence. This is called Money and Me, so I can't do a show without asking you, what are your hot stock picks, or what are you looking at, both in the US and in Singapore?
Well, I look more into Singapore, and I think that, currently, I've been a net seller of it, but should the recovery come, I did mention that, property was something that I'll look at. If SIA does fall to more palatable levels, that's something that I'll accumulate. And of course, we have been positioned in some of the healthcare stocks, healthcare-related stocks, like, say, MedTech and Top Glove.
Yes. Can you share a little bit? We saw great interest in Top Glove. What is there further upside?
Well, I think that the numbers are glowing, and this is sort of expected that it's going to rise. But I think the jump has been fairly significant, and this is just the start of it, because the demand for gloves really, really exploded into the end of the first quarter and very much into the jump. There's a huge surge in demand, and I think their orders are already like way into 2021, 2022. So, they cannot supply almost as fast enough. And that has resulted in the average selling price also rising. And a good thing about it, I think the stars are all aligned. They actually sell in US dollars, and guess what? Most of their the bulk of their cost is in ringgit. So there's going to be massive. There's going to be a big margin expansion for companies like them. Demand surge, margin expansion. I think that the bottom line will look very, very healthy. We're talking about, you know, for the next 2 years, there could possibly be a 6-8 times, and not 6-8%, but 6-8 times jump in their earnings growth. So it's definitely one of the companies that investors can eyeball.
All right, we've been talking.
Especially if a second wave comes back, and I think that, you know, it is threatening with a lot of economies opening up, and also, you know, in the West there's a lot of protests currently because of George Floyd. Then I think it's a potential recipe for a second wave.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree with you there. We thank you as always for your insights, Terence. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle.
Terence Wong there, CEO of Azure Capital. We were just talking about Malaysia's glove maker, Top Glove, which, by the way, had a banner quarter. Its after-tax profit jumped nearly fourfold to about $115 million.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.